Begin with a prayer. O Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Friend, Beloved God.
Friend, Beloved God.
Great Masters.
Great Masters.
Of Self-Realization.
Of Self-Realization.
Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ.
Babaji Krishna.
Babaji Krishna.
Lahiri Mahashai.
Lahiri Mahashai.
Sri Yukteswar.
Sri Yukteswar.
Paramahansa Yogananda.
Paramahansa Yogananda.
Blessed Mother.
Blessed Mother.
Dearest David.
Dearest David.
Beloved Saint Francis.
Beloved Saint Francis.
Lovingly we invoke your presence.
Lovingly we invoke your presence.
Into this space.
Into this space.
Into my heart and my mind.
Into my heart and my mind.
O beloved Lord.
O beloved Lord.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Home. Sunday. Gonna pick up in our quiet talks with the Master. Last week we read Riches of the Soul, and this is called The Holy Readjustment. I would speak further with you regarding the burdens which you bring to me to be lifted from your heart and consumed by the altar fire. The question arises in your mind, Lord, can they just be consumed and thus leave my life? What of their effects? How shall taking the fear of them from my heart solve the problem? Listen carefully, my child, for this is the kernel at the heart of the message. It is only the fear and the weight of the burden, the outer wrappings, that are burned at the altar. This leaves the heart of it exposed to the rays of my divine intelligence and wisdom. This washes and purges it in a holy readjustment. Unseen but mighty forces take this heart out of the problem and work it out on the basis of my truth and my perfect harmony. Readjustment in the outer life must and shall follow, as daylight follows night. So you see, my beloved, there is never cause for fear. Never are you justified in carrying for one moment a thing which distresses you. You shall put this to the test and find it true. Now you have a deeper understanding of how my love operates when you do your part and accept the great privilege which is so freely given. You understand now how you really have a right to go forth from this tryst, free in every way for my service. Knowing this, if you are still fettered by anything, great or small, it shall displease and grieve me greatly. Your mind must ever be open and receptive to my truths. It cannot penetrate a mind distraught by disturbances. Peace, and the secret of peace, I have now given you. Go forth and practice it. Let's take a moment to internalize this message and apply it within ourselves and any burdens that we've been carrying with us. First, by simply accepting God's presence in this moment and inside of our very self. Choosing to accept this reality to trust it, not to resist it in any way, not to look outside of the self in any way. But to simply know that God, as this intelligence, this guiding light in my life, is here and now. And now, knowing this, I take anything that keeps me tied up, anything that has been keeping me in the bondage of accepting this, from accepting this. We all, each one of us, know what that is. This week, anything that's been going on, any struggle that's come to the forefront, any burden that has begun to get heavier. And we take this out, this feeling of heaviness, of hurt, of grief. We take this feeling out and we hold it up and we offer this to this presence of God that lives within us. And His promise is He will take it from us and lift this load if we will just give it over. We will not remain attached to it, this feeling as our own. And so we see on the altar, we see the flame burning of God's love. And in this flame, we can take this feeling and we can place it to be purified. See it go into the flame, and we can see it lift off in the smoke into the ether, clearing the way for us to become light, for us to feel God's peace, for the holy readjustment to take place. Whereby we realize this life, our own life, as God's. God's alone. And we stop pretending otherwise. We go through this exercise in our sadhana, in our meditation, as often as we need to. And let nothing stop us from this practice. And whatever it is that comes up each day, this practice becomes our offering each night. But we must do it. And we must know and feel how, when we don't do it, that even our Father and our Masters, even that they mourn for us when we don't choose to do this. And they don't want us to suffer or carry these burdens around with us. They want us to live this life in freedom, in happiness, in simplicity of them, of their love. This can only be done when we make the effort to make this offering. So it is. is my wish for each of you this morning to feel that perfect freedom of having made your offering and of feeling the burden lifted. I'd like to ask Peony, will you please lead us in some chanting that we can focus our mind and our devotion to God this morning, that we have nothing else to think about, nothing else to do, just to give our love to God, to feel grateful for everything He gives us, to feel grateful for this life in Him. This hour we can decide that no woodpecker of disturbance will bother us, and no raven of a black bird in a dark night will weigh us down. to read this posting from Yogacharya David. It's from April 21st, 2016. It's called A Bridge to the Infinite. Life throws so many experiences at us from unexpected directions. From the time we are children and our world is full of adult knees, to the time when we look in the mirror and wonder who that old person is staring back at us. Life is a roller coaster ride of experiences. What is this life all about? It is a question that makes us go deeper than just living on the surface. The quest for meaning can be the beginning of the greatest adventure in life, the search for God realization. In this venture into higher consciousness, we are told to keep our minds on God as a means of purifying the mind and gaining a direct perception of the truth. What we find in doing so is that life rudely interrupts our best intentions for this practice. Earning a living, our social relationships, desires of the body, and distractions of the world. Those thousands and thousands of big and little situations that draw the mind everywhere except to God. It seems that life itself conspires to stop our making real spiritual progress. In part, the problem is that we imagine these distractions are not part of our practice. We would be so much better off if we could somehow just get rid of them. However, a little analysis reveals that these are not the things that keep us from our path. They are the path itself. We have been conditioned to think of all these distractions as something different from God. They are not. In truth, they are God come to us in these various forms. At last, you come to terms with the fact that when it comes to daily life, its distractions and its desires are really dynamic expressions of divine consciousness. When you have understood this, you have found a key to understanding life in a new and transformative way. The life energy and intelligence found in all life, even life that apparently runs contrary to elevated consciousness, all comes from one original source. A way to reconnect to this universal vision, in which all is God, is to allow all input into your brain. Let all thoughts and all feelings remind you of God. In your mind, create a bridge to God with each and every experience. For instance, a beautiful sunset reminds you of God. That is an easy one. Then you think of the food you eat as ingesting God. This is more unusual, but you can work with it. Tougher categories come as sexual drives, an impulse to lie, fear creeping into your awareness, and anger erupting. Looked at properly, all of these lower impulses can become bridges back to God. However, since these thoughts have taken you in the opposite direction from God in the past, they represent an even bigger stretch for you in your practice. Since these thoughts have taken you in the opposite direction from God in the past, they represent an even bigger stretch for you in your practice. By connecting a thought or feeling to God, you break the spell of separation. For example, take the sensation of pain. It can definitely be a distraction. Even the thought of having pain in the future can take the mind far from God consciousness. You build a bridge to God by thinking of the life energy that is in the pain impulse itself. That life energy gives the electrical impulse its power to travel to your brain via nerve pathways. By connecting to the life energy that is behind the pain impulse and affirming that the life energy comes from God, you are directing your mind directly back to its ultimate source. And as a result, you feel greater strength, peace, and an ability to weather any storm coming your way. Another example, you are feeling a sexual drive that is drawing you away from God. You then sense the power of God as the energy behind the drive. This bridge to God you are making releases the purity of God. You realize how limiting the sex impulse is, how narrowly it focuses your mind, and you suddenly feel a release from it and an expansive freedom. You can do the same with fear, anger, depression, and the feeling of being overwhelmed. All situations can be bridged back to the infinite, thus connecting you to all the attributes of spirit and freeing you from the limitations imposed by the separation from your higher self. Keeping your mind on God then becomes practical and is rooted in your day-to-day experience. It creates a magic touch when your lower impulses receive grace and are transformed into something higher, better. This Midas touch does not make ordinary objects turn into metallic gold. Rather, ordinary experience is touched by transformative spirit and becomes the gold of God consciousness. Take heart. You are not left helpless against an onslaught of materialism. Rather, you have the means to connect with God in all circumstances and thus build a bridge to the infinite. Well, it feels like a very timely reading for many reasons and for many people, myself included. And it's very interesting that this posting on the 21st of April and where we're naturally at in Quiet Talks with the Master, how the readings line up so perfectly. This holy readjustment is what David is also talking about. That is, in essence, our own ability and our own right to change our consciousness and to turn towards God, especially in the things which we think aren't God. And for each of us, there are these kind of triggers in our life. And David will often teach about the oppositional force which comes up in life. And we have to be very aware and conscious of this oppositional force, because when we aren't, we have a tendency to come to face that force and to get swept up into it. And so it's very easy when someone comes at us in an inappropriate way or with upsets that we can respond in kind. We don't remember that there's some aspect of God manifesting through this dynamic and through this experience, and instead we just respond in the way that this person is behaving. We react. This can cause a lot more pain, can't it? And in truth, it's like this in every experience, that if we are able to remember and to truly feel that God is inside of what's going on, we can have the means for navigating it gracefully. And we can even feel ourselves become more free in the process and realize this challenge, this opposition is actually a gift to help me grow into the Spirit even more fully. And yet, for as often as we're able to remember that, you can almost guarantee that we will forget. And it's important that we not beat ourselves up when we forget, but rather that the mere act of realizing we have forgotten is our prod to go back in the right direction again. David uses the example of pain. It's something very universal for all of us that in different ways and at different times we experience pain. And sometimes that comes as a kind of physical pain, and other times that comes as an energetic pain of our emotions and our feelings. And sometimes it's a kind of causal pain in the consciousness of feeling that separation from God, experiencing that we're not in that oneness, or experiencing that on behalf of someone else, that this is a real experience we have when we sense that separation in another and we feel the pain in the separation of consciousness for someone else as if it were our very own. We can't feel there's a difference anymore. I was reflecting on how I had this experience with nettles, stinging nettles, at the beginning of the farm, and realizing there was such a kind of shakti in the nettles, unlike any plant that I'm aware of. It has so much power and beauty in it. And so I naturally wanted to learn about the plant, and I did. And I looked into it and would read about it, and we learned from another herbalist teacher who talked about it. But, you know, there's a lot of information about this kind of thing if you want to read about it. But my experience of learning about it was actually just interacting with it myself. Once I became aware of its existence and saw it growing all around me at this time of year, then I really wanted to understand what it was for, what is its purpose. And so I would interact with it, and I would learn how you could actually handle it with your hands, if you had some sensitivity to how to relate to it, that it wouldn't even sting you. But also that the sting had its own kind of intelligence to it, and I kind of enjoyed it. And it was kind of a contradiction to the feeling of when I would get stung too much and I would be woken up in the middle of the night and my whole body would be buzzing, and that would kind of bother me. Or if I wasn't aware of it at all and it would sting me, and because I was walking through the forest in sandals, I would get frustrated with it and think, what kind of weird thing is this? And see, depending on my own consciousness and relationship to the plant, my perception of it would change drastically. But the reality of stinging nettles is you don't have to tune into it very long. Look at the color of it, the rich green color, and the time of year, and you look at the roots traveling underground, and it's like a sea of life under there. And the fertility that it builds. I started making compost tea and tea with it, and realizing that unlike most things which get weaker over time, the nettle tea, the longer it would steep, the more it would become like sewage water. It was so rich. And then somebody once said to me, it has every trace mineral in it. It's one of the only plants on the planet. And I thought, oh my God, this thing is incredible. And it was from these kind of growing understanding of the plant as something very powerful in God that my whole attitude changed, and I started to appreciate getting stung by it. Now, I don't recommend everybody roll around in it unless they're prepared for really embracing that consciousness fully. And yet, that potential is there, and it is the potential of understanding energy. When we relate to this body as being stung, then we experience nettles as inflicting pain. But when we relate to energy as a universal living reality, we experience how a nettle can sting you on your hand. And if you're not thinking about pain and you're only thinking about the intelligence of that energy, you can actually move that energy around in your body. And so I started doing it, and I would get stung on my arm and I would experiment with it. It's like it would wake up all the cells in my arm and they would be totally alive. And suddenly I could move that prana up into my shoulder, and I could move it into my chest. I could move it down to my toes if I wanted to, because it was prana and it was intelligent. And it wasn't just a painful reality anymore. It was a living energy. And so in this we see that how we relate to all of life is exactly like the nettles. So many people who I would introduce the nettles to over the years would be kind of offended by them. There was one man I knew named Andrew from Ireland, and he grew up with nettles there, and he saw us picking them one time, and he laughed and mocked us and said we hated those things growing up. And I didn't tell him a single thing about why they were a good plant. He didn't care. And so in that, I saw in that moment, well, that's going to be his relationship to nettles. But that doesn't have to define mine. And in fact, his limitation was a kind of opposing force in me that made me want to wake up even more to the power of nettles in the right way. So I wasn't upset at him or thinking, you're wrong. In fact, it was God kind of prodding me a little bit to be totally clear in my own relationship to nettles and not be sucked into another person's material attitudes around them. It's on one hand very understandable that if you don't have that energetic awareness and you're not relating to things as God's consciousness, you would hate stinging nettles, wouldn't you? But as we expand and we grow in our heart and in our mind and the potential of God in everything and in all things, our life, our relationship to life changes a lot, and it continues to evolve in the most wonderful and dynamic ways. We needn't suffer and carry the burden of everything. We needn't feel the pain of those nettles in the same way that we felt we had to feel that before. Because we go beyond that as a physical reality. We go beyond some circumstance and someone's behavior as just that of their own confused and conflicted ego. And we see that God has a purpose in this. God has a purpose for me, and God has a purpose for the good of all. And it's not for me to try to define that purpose. It's not for me to be the teacher of that purpose. It's for me to be quiet and to tune in and to be open to the revelation of that purpose. In fact, the more that we try to take ownership of figuring out these purposes and sharing them, the more that we cut off God's ability to do it. And so we learn in this to be truly humble and to live life from the inside out, so that whatever it is that's coming up and we're trying to tune into or trying to understand, we want to listen first. We are constantly listening for God's direction and God's understanding to show us, why is this happening like this? What is the purpose? And we start to learn that God will show us and He will tell us through our own thoughts often and through our own understanding, not outside of ourselves at all. He will make things known to us. And that when He does, we have to be very careful to remember those are God's thoughts. Those don't belong to Zach. Those don't belong to any of us. And as soon as we try to take a kind of credit for those things, well, we've set ourselves up to go right back into the same kind of suffering we were in before. So in this, we find such a dynamic and living relationship with God in the most seemingly mundane things. And in this, as we find what David is encouraging for all of us to do, it's to build the bridge to the source in every aspect of our life, and everything that rubs us wrong, and everything that's going stupendously. In every aspect, we find that we need to build this bridge back to God, not out of some kind of desire to use it in some certain way or some ego-motivated thing. It's a tangible need, because we know that when we don't do it, we set ourselves up to suffer, and we can't be servants for God's will in this world if we stay little, if we stay in bondage to the idea of this little reality. So we have all the natural motivation, when we just do any introspection at all, to get over ourselves, to get over the idea that this is my pain, this is my suffering. It's not ours. It's all from God, and it's all good in the end. I had a dream two nights ago, and it was very interesting and very pointed in this same understanding of this moment. And I was with a saint in the dream, and it was the first time that we've met. And as I saw him, he was sitting in a chair next to an altar. And I was so happy and so overwhelmed to be in his presence that I ran up and we held each other's hand. And I was on my knees before him. And I had the thought, like, well, what am I supposed to do now? I just wanted to completely surrender before him. And so I did. And I fully prostrated and tried to touch his feet. And as soon as I did that, he stood up. And he went over and he kind of ran from me toward the altar, giggling. And he didn't want me to do that. He wasn't having that from me. And I remember I was just sobbing in my dream, because I just wanted to give myself completely to him, and he was playing a game with me, and he didn't want that. And instead, he grabbed me by the hand and took me to my room and told me, this is where you'll be staying. And then an interesting shift happened in the dream. It was like I was going to get to stay with this saint. But the experience to this first half of the dream, you could call it, was me in myself. And I was experiencing this as myself before this saint. Well, after he took me to my room, he went off to do other things, and I was by myself. And it was like suddenly I was taken out of myself, and I was watching myself. And now it was no longer from inside of Zach's experience. It was watching Zach. And I did something in the dream that hurt myself a lot to watch. I pulled out my phone. This is a true story. Two nights ago. And I started looking down into my phone. Now, the interesting thing is I wasn't experiencing this as Zach. So I don't even know what Zach was looking at on his phone. I only know he was scrolling his phone. And what really got me about this experience was, here I had just been with this saint, and I was completely open, and we no doubt had a great connection with one another. And then here I was watching myself, letting go of that connection, scrolling on my phone. And this really gave me a lot of pain in my dream, that I had to sit there and watch that. And I woke up. And I remembered it right when I woke up, and it wasn't until a few hours later, and I was sitting in my room by myself, that all of the memory of this dream came back to me clearly as I meditated. And I felt all the pain of having to watch myself, losing my openness and receptivity to that saint, so that I could look at my phone, probably scroll through the news. And I thought to myself, what are you showing me, God? And it was at the same time that I, in this same morning that I opened up and I read this posting from David about building the bridge. And it helped me to not be too hard on myself for feeling those feelings and not take it so personal, but to instead recognize that I had some work to do. And that work to do was in how I was using this device, which is a tool and it can be used for good, but it can also, as we all know, be used to completely take us away from God. And so in the last 24 hours or so, I have found myself that every time something has shifted in me, every time I've pulled out my phone, my first thought has been to think of God. And to think, if I have a purpose on this phone in God, it's okay to use it. And if I don't, I need to put it down right now and put it away until it becomes clear to me that bridge is there, that this phone is a bridge to God and it's not a gully. It's not creating a gulf between God and myself. And so I share this personally because this is now my process. This is something I can work on. And in fact, I found that over the course of yesterday, I did find a great kind of release in this, that instead of feeling maybe even guilty for looking at my phone or feeling bad about it, it actually became a conduit for me to keep my mind focused on God. I think for all of us, we would do well to tune into what these things are that we're still doing that are preventing us from keeping our mind fixed in the highest and from doing our tasks in God. Maybe there's some aspect of fear that's coming up in us that we're needing to face and to recognize that, you know what, every time this fear comes up in me, this is my perfect opportunity to turn back to the altar, to face God, and to face this fear with God, and to actually feel the joy in that. Or maybe it's some kind of temptation, and every time that temptation awakens in you, every time that call towards the senses is becoming active in you, you step back and you say, God, this is you waking this up in me because I need to make this purified completely. And this is the opportunity you're giving me to focus completely on you. For all of us, there are these things that are coming up perpetually, and there are certain things that represent kind of our core delusions. And we don't want to fall into the trap of suffering these as egos, creating more separation from God. We do want to be able to start to recognize these things as our actual bridges to God. That, like David said in the reading, at first, it can be a real challenge because these have represented our separation. But because of that, they represent the greatest opportunity. That in these very things lies our yellow brick road. And this can become and be our sadhana for each one of us. And this is why it must be the inner path. Is because to embark on this kind of spiritual work, it requires total humility and total sincerity with God. That this is our number one priority. That there's nothing else that I'm looking on the outside to obtain for myself, to achieve any kind of status. There's nothing else there. All those things will come and go of their own accord. They're not even our business. Our business is God. And so, as we embark as individuals and as the collective of this ashram, one promise that we're given is that this oppositional force isn't just going to quietly dissipate into the night and be gone forever, but rather that this oppositional force in us will become increasingly subtle, and it will find new avenues for presenting itself and for making its case to keep us separate and small. And so at every turn, we have to remember that this is the essential game we are playing, that we are not little and small, that we are not this little veil of delusion or confusion or pride or inferiority. We are none of these things. We are here to open our hearts and to give ourselves to God and to be His pure and loving servants. That is all. And in this, there is a joy that the ego will never understand. There is a purpose in life that is so much greater than our self-idea as this person will ever be able to place. Because we grow into a sense of reality, a sense of self that is united with everyone and everything. And maybe it is that the people who are oppressing us become our greatest source of cultivating compassion, because we see the suffering that it must entail to have those feelings and to attack in that way. And so we realize to feel that must really be hard. And the only way to help that is to pray and to visualize and to make union with God in ourself, to help that person go beyond it, to help that soul rise above that ego nature. For each of us, we do this for one another, and we do this for everyone who comes into contact with us, to the ability that we are able to realize that God is inside of it all. God is inside of one and all. And we can guarantee that it will continue, this life. It will continue to have its ups and its downs. It will continue to have its moments of seemingly outward perfection where things are truly ordained and wonderful. And it will also have the things that come on the backside of that wave of true difficulty and true challenge for us to understand, why is this happening? What is the purpose in this? But when we make union between the highs and the lows, and we stop separating God from both realities, and we see that everything has its natural place, and we are here to navigate all of these things with equanimity, with calmness, not getting stirred up into how great things are, not taking credit for how great God's manifesting in our life, and to not get swept up into how bad something feels or how off it is, but rather to just maintain our calmness and look for our next steps in God. There is no path in God outside of our own life. And as we do this, we find that our own life starts to become a reflection of us in sincerely embarking in this journey with God, this journey of facing our own karma, of transcending our past actions and our current habits, and of stepping into a role of doing that with others. And not because we're doing it with someone else, but because in our heart and in our mind, we are realizing our oneness with one another. We are realizing there is no separation. I never really was this body. I never really was just this little personhood. It was always God's intelligence, and the degree to which I'm able to expand in God's intelligence because I'm not self-identified as this little person, is the degree to which we can keep growing and growing in infinity with God. All of us have no doubt had little experiences or great experiences, knowing that this is truth, that this is our path and our truth. And so we embark on this journey with a calmness and a faith. We don't have to worry anymore. We can allow the things to move through us that need to move through us. We don't need to judge ourselves for having emotions. We can have total acceptance and always turning toward the altar to make our offering to God. Whatever it is that has come up, this is our offering, nothing else. It's always a trap when we're trying to offer things we don't have. How much better it is to offer exactly what we have, the good, the bad, and the ugly. It doesn't matter to God. He just wants us to make the offering. What freedom in knowing that. What joy. I would like to go back to the posting that went right before this one from David. And the two themes are inextricably linked. And this one was from April 15th. So I read April 21st, and this is the 15th. So we're somewhere in between. I think today's the 19th. And this is called Enlightened Self-Interest. Normally, our interests lie very close to home. We are mostly interested in what will satisfy our senses and the ego. Through the evolution of consciousness, we grow to want what is best for our family, circle of friends, perhaps our hometown, and even our country. Through this enlarging circle, we can gradually see an expansion of interest, heart, and spirit. Entering into a spiritual understanding of life makes you know there is no part of life that is not connected to the whole or to yourself. Compassion arises in the soul when the interest of another becomes important to you. It may be the suffering of a child, an animal, or a group of people that are not normal members of your circle of association. You find yourself sacrificing for others without thought of reward for yourself, just as saints around the world have spent themselves in such service to humanity. However, one can be of service to others from two vastly different motivations. Initially, service can be for the aggrandizement of the ego. Look what I have sacrificed. No, I mean it. Look at what I have done for others. Or, sacrifice and service are driven by what is satisfying to God, not motivated by what others think. We may be misled by the word sacrifice, thinking there is no satisfaction in it, and that we must simply suffer. This notion comes from the mental conditioning of the ego. In reality, in harmonizing your life with God, there is a transfer from self-interest, which creates suffering, to enlightened self-interest, with a capital S, which brings systemic harmony and joy of service. Ordinary self-interest is driven by the needs of the body and the ego mind. It can be the narrow self-interest of a child in order to satisfy his or her needs for food, warmth, comfort, and the developing needs of an ego. Ordinary self-interest can also be more intricate calculations for gaining wealth, power, and prestige. Always the needs are driven by the body and the ego mind. Enlightened self-interest comes from a wider identification with creation, seeing the world through the mind of the Creator. Looking out upon the world, there is no perceived difference between the happiness of others and yourself. True self-interest is not calculated for doing some good. Rather, it is a spontaneous response to the collective needs of creation that spring from an intuitive understanding of the Creator's will. It is a spontaneous response to the collective needs that spring from intuitive understanding of the Creator's will. Real self-interest is not attached to outcome. It does not care who sees or does not see, and it feels spontaneous joy in performing the activity itself. True self-interest gives joy to the giver as well as the receiver. There is no martyrdom complex in which the giver must suffer alone. Rather, giving is an expression of divine will, and therefore brings total freedom to the servant of God. In God consciousness, all humankind and all creation are part of you, and you feel joy at the physical, mental, and spiritual progress of creation. You also feel pain at the suffering and mistakes of those who are none other than yourself. God's compassion flows through you, and you feel the all-encompassing divine comforter intermixed with tender, even painful compassion for others. The divine presence in you now naturally radiates out of you to uplift and heal creation of its suffering. We all broadcast what we experience in life to those whom our lives touch. Being in tune with the divine presence increases the power of what you transmit, bringing solace, beauty, and purity to this world. God uses you to broadcast love and compassion to all creation. There is truly nothing more useful or deeply meaningful for you than to lead a life of true self-interest. As I sat here, I found my thoughts naturally went into a continuation of this direction, and then starting to formulate a whole nother talk. I think I better just stop. Just give it all to God. Pima, I'd like to ask that you play your song for us when you're ready.
Thank you. joy divine, leaning on the everlasting arms. What a blessedness, what a peace is mine, leaning on the everlasting arms. Leaning on Jesus, leaning on Jesus, safe and secure.
For our healing prayers this morning, why don't we have a special focus on all those in our lives and that we're called to pray for this morning, seeing them expanding in their sense of self, expanding to be full of goodwill and love for others in their life, and of stepping into the consciousness of the whole, and not of their own little part, but of being free in the whole with God. For all those who God puts in your heart and mind this morning, let us visualize each soul growing up in God. holding all of these souls in the natural love of our own heart, let's pray together, Divine Mother.
Divine Mother,
Thou art omnipresent.
Thou
art in all your children.
Thou art in all your children.
Manifest your loving, healing presence.
Manifest your loving, healing presence.
Manifest your wholeness.
Manifest your wholeness.
In all these bodies, minds, and souls.
In all these bodies, minds, and souls.
Peace.
Peace.
Bliss.
Bliss.
Amen.